Spirit Airlines pilots are already headed back to work. Students learn to build small projects to be carried on sounding rockets. And U.S. and EU aviation biggies meet in Brussels. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, June 17th, 2010. Contract talks between Spirit Airlines and its pilots dragged on for 4 years, but it only took 4 days of a strike to finally bring the two sides together on an agreement. Spirit announced late yesterday that it will resume full normal operations tomorrow, following what it says was the unanimous approval of union negotiators on a new tentative contract. A ratification vote is expected next month, but in the meantime, Spirit pilots will be reporting back to work. Both sides are being polite. Spirit CEO Ben Baldanza commented, quote, "Our pilots worked hard to get a mutually favorable deal that allows the company to grow while improving their wages and benefits. We apologize to those of our customers whose travel was disrupted as a result of the strike and look forward to earning back their trust with ultra-low fares, great service, and the best pilots in the sky," unquote. Captain Sean Creed, head of the Spirit unit of the Airline Pilots Association, said, quote, "I am pleased that we were able to fashion a constructive solution to our differences that will allow us to resume serving our customers," unquote. The strike began Saturday, following the end of a cooling-off period required by federal law. On Tuesday, U.S. Airways pilots had joined Spirit pilots on their picket lines in a show of support, noting the similarities between their circumstances. Spirit Airlines urges passengers holding tickets to reconfirm their flights at spiritair.com. The airline is also celebrating the settlement by offering customers $50 off their next flight through November 17th and 5,000 bonus miles. University students and professors from across the country and Puerto Rico are converging on NASA's Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia this week to learn how to build small experiments that can be launched on sounding rockets. The week-long workshop, known as Rock On, begins Saturday. The 80 participants will build standardized experiments that will fly on a NASA Terrier Orion suborbital sounding rocket set to launch on June 24th. The 35-foot-tall rocket is expected to fly to an altitude of 75 miles. After launch and payload recovery, the participants will conduct preliminary data analysis and discuss their results. In addition to the 7 workshop-built experiments, 11 custom-built, self-contained experiments will also fly on the rocket inside a payload canister known as ROCSAT. The latter experiments were developed at 10 universities that previously had participated in a Rock-On workshop. The workshop is funded by NASA's National Space Grant College and Fellowship Program in partnership with the Colorado and Virginia Space Grant Consortia. This will be the workshop's 3rd year. Aviation industry and regulatory heavyweights will be meeting in Belgium at the end of the month to discuss issues facing the U.S. and Europe, some of them potentially contentious. The second Transatlantic Aviation Issues Conference is titled U.S.-EU Cooperation at a Crossroads and is being held in Brussels June 29th through July 1st. The meeting is presented by the American Association of Airport Executives, the International Association of Airport Executives, and the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, in collaboration with the European Commission and Eurocontrol. It will bring together more than 100 leaders to dissect political, economic, and technical issues. On the agenda are discussions on the appropriate response to volcanic ash, the potential consequences of the failure to implement the U.S.-EU Aviation Safety Agreement, the U.S.-EU Open Skies Agreement, the environment, a global shift to satellite-based air traffic management, the status of aviation security, and more. The event takes place at the Conrad Brussels Hotel. Up next on ANN, MGL debuts its new Mini EFIS. A Florida flight school says the Piper Sport fits right in. And Lockheed completes a record-setting weld on Orion. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher-performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 17th. I'm Paul Plagg. MGL Avionics, based in South Africa, is making the low end of the market a very interesting and competitive place. The company's newest product is the Extreme Mini EFIS. It combines a functional primary flight display, engine monitor, fuel computer, and basic GPS in a standard round 3 1/8-inch hole mount package. MGL notes that the 4.3-inch diagonal sunlight readable display is the same size and resolution as the popular Garmin Era and Bendix King Aviator GPSs. MGL's Extreme EFIS, however, does not offer moving map functionality. The base unit starts at $1,000, including the built-in GPS and an active antenna. Adding a full AHARS costs another $1,260, but isn't necessary if you can settle for GPS-derived bank information. Engine monitoring requires a remote data acquisition computer, starting at $160, and some additional engine sensors. Direct to and basic route navigation will eventually be supported, and a full two-axis autopilot using optional external servos will be included in a free software update later this year. Find more details at mglavionics.com. The Central Florida Sport Pilot Flight School, First Landings Aviation, which was founded by two young entrepreneurs in May of last year, has taken delivery of a 2010 Piper Sport LTD. The addition of the Piper Sport allows the school to offer low-wing training, complementing the school's existing high-wing Remos G3-600. Both are equipped with full-glass displays, autopilot, and parachute recovery systems. Chris Esposito, chief pilot and co-owner of First Landings Aviation, notes the Piper Sport was designed for training and adds, quote, "A lot of students and pilots are more comfortable in a metal airplane, and they appreciate the Piper name because they know it is synonymous with quality and performance," unquote. First Landings Aviation opened last year as Central Florida's first dedicated sport pilot flight school. Since last summer, the Remos has logged more than 850 hours of flight training, with instructors training students from as far away as Germany, Holland, Singapore, and Italy. The cancellation of the Constellation program may be looming, but so far, that hasn't stopped some of the technical innovations. The Orion crew exploration vehicle took shape on Tuesday as the two halves of the crew module were fused together at NASA's McCood Assembly Facility in New Orleans. The Lockheed Martin Orion team welded the forward cone assembly to the aft barrel assembly using the next-generation friction stir weld process. That weld is 445 inches long and is the longest such weld of its kind. The goal is to ensure optimal structural integrity for the harsh environments of spaceflight. All welds to date have met stringent quality requirements without any rework required. Next come static vibration, acoustic, and water landing tests. Results will be used to correlate sizing models for all subsystems on the vehicle. Lockheed says the combination of material and manufacturing advancements in technology are key reasons why the spacecraft is more lightweight and damage-resistant than many industry experts thought possible. Still ahead, you too could be a Centennial Series sponsor. When congestion strikes, you want a senator on your flight. And new controversy surrounds black holes. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, June 17th. I'm Paul Plagg. NASA is looking for individuals, organizations, and corporations to sponsor its Centennial Challenge Series, a program of incentive prizes designed for the citizen inventor that generates creative solutions to problems of interest to NASA and the nation. Since 2005, NASA has conducted 19 competitions in 6 challenge areas and awarded $4.5 million to 13 different teams. Areas of focus have included green flight, wireless power transmission, and strong tether, which one day envisions space elevators and satellites anchored to the Earth's surface. If prizes in the millions sounds like more than you or your organization can cover, you should know that NASA provides all the prize money and asks sponsors only to cover the costs of administering the contests. Sitting number 31 for departure at Chicago's O'Hare International, the pilot of a flight that was already about an hour late pushing back from the gate Sunday announced he was going to power down the aircraft for about 30 minutes while he waited. According to an email from a Democratic Hill staffer to Politico, one of the passengers on that plane was Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Patrick Leahy, a Vermont Democrat. When the seatbelt sign was turned off, he reportedly walked to the back of the plane. 5 minutes later, the pilot came back on the intercom and told the passengers, "Folks, we've just been given the go-ahead to take off," unquote. When thanked by a fellow passenger, Leahy reportedly commented, quote, "The pilot said he'd do his best," unquote. I'm not sure whether this makes me want to get booked on the same flight as my senator, or just make sure I'm not delayed unfairly by being behind his flight in the queue. Maybe I should just be glad he's flying commercial and not requisitioning Air Force planes. And finally today, a Hallmark talking graduation card, which has reportedly been on the shelves for 3 years, has suddenly caught the attention of the NAACP in Los Angeles. The card has a space theme, but the scratchy, grainy voices typical of the cards apparently leaves room for misunderstanding. In the card, cartoon characters Hoops and Yo-Yo make reference to black holes, and apparently the L in holes is not distinct, producing what you might call an IMUS moment. Leon Jenkins, speaking for the NAACP in L.A., told Fox News the card is, quote, "very demeaning to African-American women," unquote. After being told what the card really says, the NAACP still wants it pulled from shelves. And really, who can argue? What if the use of that term was one day to spread to music produced by African-American artists? Where might it end? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Anousheh Ansari looks back on her trip to the International Space Station and recalls the consecutive suborbital flights of Spaceship One that won the XPRIZE, which carried her family's name. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPod or Podcast Alley or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.